Grant from The Great Impasta, a restaurant serving foods from northern Italy. The Great Impasta is at 114 West Church in Champaign. The staff at The Great Impasta encourage you to join them in supporting WILL AM 580. Today's broadcast is made possible with support from Lincoln Square Mall in Urbana, with more than a dozen shops, businesses, and restaurants, including Andy's Hallmark with cards, gift wrap, and candies, and The Reading Group, a nonprofit clinic helping children and youth with reading and writing problems, on the web at readinggroup.org.
Good morning. Welcome back to the second hour of Focus 580, our morning talk program. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us. Producing the program, Harriet Williamson, Travis Stansel, Jason Croft is at the controls. Tomorrow morning in the 10 o'clock hour of this show, we'll be talking with Gus Speth. He's Dean of the School of Forestry and Environmental Studies at Yale, and we'll be talking about a book that he's authored. It looks at global climate issues. It's been out now for a couple of months. The title of his book is Red Sky at Morning, America and the Crisis of Global Environment. That will be our number one. Hour two, we'll talk with Bob Zimmerman. He is an award-winning essayist and writer in the area of exploration of space. You may remember that some months ago, we talked a little bit with him about a book that he wrote that looks at the history of the space station and the idea of the space station. And we thought it'd be interesting to talk a little bit about commercialization of space. Maybe you've read some of the recent stories about the privately funded effort to put a person into space. We'll talk a little bit about that and perhaps some other sorts of things that have to do with space and questions will be welcome. That's tomorrow in the 11 o'clock hour of the show, the second hour. We're here weekday mornings from 10 until noon. We have 10 different topics for you every week, and we always welcome your questions and comments. In this part of Focus 580, we'll be talking about the new law, providing some prescription drug coverage for people on Medicare that was signed by the president last December. Now, the full package of coverage will not go into effect for some years, in fact, not until 2006. However, in the meantime, to try to help people out with the cost of their prescription drugs, there is a program that allows people to go out and sign up for discount cards. And in fact, June 1st was when that started, when you could first go out and sign up for those cards. The number of people signing up for them is significantly less than the government had expected. And people in surveys continue to say that they find this whole new law that provides for some prescription drug coverage for people on Medicare very confusing. So we thought it might be a good idea to, again, touch base on this subject and with a guest that has been with us before to talk about this very subject. And this part of Focus 580, we'll be talking with Mary Agnes Carey. She is a senior health reporter for Congressional Quarterly. This is a publication that specializes in covering Washington politics. It's available both in print and online. So if you're interested in political news, that's a place to go to find out what's going on Capitol Hill. She's been good enough to spend another hour with us this morning talking by telephone. And, of course, questions are welcome. I know she would do her best to answer the questions of people who are listening. The number, if you're here in Champaign-Urbana, where we are, 333-9455. We do also have a toll-free line that's good anywhere that you can hear us, and that is 800-222-9455. So if it would be a long distance call, you're listening around Illinois and Indiana, or in fact, anyone listening on the internet, no matter where you are, well, as long as you're in the United States, you can use the toll-free line too. That's 800-222-9455. Again, Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455, and toll-free, 800-222-9455. Ms. Carey, hello.
Hi, how you doing?
I'm doing fine, thanks. And thank you very much for giving us some of your time again. We appreciate it. I got a lot of positive feedback about the last time you were on the show. So when I was continuing to read stories about how things were going with the drug discount card and about how confused people were, I said, well, now I know who we need to talk to. I think I know someone who could help. So I'm really pleased that you could talk with us again.
Great.
Well, you know, one of the things that really struck me, and this is actually going back a couple of months, but the Kaiser, folks at the Kaiser Family Foundation back in February did a survey asking people what they knew about the prescription drug benefit that was being added onto Medicare. And at this point, it had been a couple of months since the president signed it. And what they found was that they went on, they asked people, you may have heard about the fact that there was this bill to add prescription drug benefit to Medicare. And they asked people, well, to the best of your knowledge, has the bill passed and has the president signed it? And what they found was 2 months after the president signed it, 32% of seniors said, yes, they knew that the bill had passed and had been signed, but that 68% either said there was no law or that they didn't know. And for the general population, apparently the numbers of people who said, I don't know anything about it, was even higher. And that seems kind of amazing to me that because it seemed to me it got a fair amount of coverage. And I guess I wonder at this point now, do surveys like this find that people have any better understanding of it than they did in February?
I think more people are aware that the benefit is out there, how it works, if it will work for them, where to get the best deal. That seems to be the area the discussion has moved into now. I think many people are aware that there is a drug card out there for seniors and for the disabled on Medicare, because you've got an education campaign now at the federal level. They've given money to state organizations and to seniors groups that are out there trying to educate. There's a real emphasis on educating people not only about the drug card, but about the full drug benefit that you mentioned will begin in January 2006. So I think that the discussion is continuing, but you even have officials, government officials now, who have said to Medicare beneficiaries, if you want to wait a little while before you enroll in the drug card, you can do that, because once you make your choice, you're locked in until this November, when you can choose in November for what card you want in 2005. But you're limited to one Medicare-approved discount drug at a time. So even at the federal level, the officials are encouraging people to go to the Medicare website, www.medicare.gov, or to call 1-800-MEDICARE. And if people need help, to enlist, whether it's a family member, someone at a senior center, someone even perhaps, I don't want to put the work on the physician's office, but if there are medical people you're in touch with who might be able to help lead you and guide you, there's been an emphasis on some of the drug companies are trying to provide information through the physician's office, for example, to get to folks. So I think there's a full court press, if you will, to educate the public, and I think the public is catching on. But the next step is figuring out, does it work for me?
Yeah, I want to make sure that we get in and we talk a little bit about the drug discount cards and and how those work, because clearly people are confused by that. And also, it's confusing because you can only have one, and different cards will pay for some drugs and not others. So if you're taking a number of drugs, you have to look at that list and decide, okay, do I want this card that will pay for these drugs? Do I want this card that will pay for these drugs? Some cards will only work at some pharmacies. Some cards will only work in some states.
Right.
And I can imagine people just really throwing up their hands and saying, how am I supposed to figure out which one of these cards will benefit me, if in fact any of them will?
I think if I could, maybe I'll just walk you through what someone might want to consider if they want a drug card. Mm-hmm. You should sit down and make a list, of course, of all the medicines you're taking. You should think to yourself, do I want to get these through mail order? Do I want to go to a pharmacy? Do I want a pharmacy that is a certain amount of miles from my house, or am I willing to travel a little bit farther? Get all those things in order, and then if you have a computer, and again, a lot of seniors don't get on the Internet. Some do, some don't. But if you have Internet access or know someone who does, you would want to go to the Medicare website, and it will guide you through. It will ask you, for example, if you're on the FEHBP, which is the health care coverage for the federal government, or if you were on Medicaid, which is a federal program for poor and disabled, those criteria, if you're on those programs, for example, you can't get a discount drug card. There are some folks that can't get it. The Medicare website would ask you what your income is, and the reason they're doing that is if you're up to 135% of poverty for a single person, that's about $12,500 a year. For a couple, it's about $17,000. If you're in that income category, you can qualify for $600 of assistance from the government. The government essentially will give you $600 towards your prescription drugs. And so if you hit that criteria, so that's another question you're asked. Then they want you to type in your medicines, the questions about mail order pharmacy or a pharmacy nearby, and then if the system is working, there's been some complaints the website is not responding or is slow, but they're trying to fix it. Once you enter your data, then it will tell you where you can go in your neighborhood to get this, what drugstore takes it, where you could get it from mail order, how close by the drugstore is. And to some extent, you do get pricing information, but there's been some concern that the prices listed on the website may be too high. But what's happened is the drug companies have a range of prices based on dosage, for example, the number of pills in the bottle, the number of times you take it a day. And the Department of Health and Human Services and the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, these are the government agencies that oversee Medicare, they didn't want to have too low of a price. So if there's a range, you may see the higher price in the range on that website. But basically, once you get your information in, you get the information back from the website that tells you this is where you go and this is what's offered. But it can be tough, as you mentioned, sometimes, because some drugs, just as you said, some cards cover some drugs and not others. Some are taken at some pharmacies and not others. Some offer mail order, some don't. And it gets really confusing. I was talking to a colleague whose, I think it was her mother or father, had four different types of drugs they were taking, and she just got pages and pages of information back, and trying to go through it drove her crazy, basically. She was just trying to figure it out, how to do it. And this is the hard part, because when the full drug benefit starts, seniors will get this kind of information sent to them about options in their area, their state, or their region about the type of plans they can get for their full drug coverage. So this is just the first step, trying to figure out if the card works for you. And as you know, it's voluntary, so you don't have to take a Medicare prescription drug card. The fees are about $30 a year for the card. Some are lower. They can't be higher than 30. Some offer lower rates. But this takes a lot of effort on a beneficiary's part to do this. And like you said, some have just said, oh, this is too complex, I don't want to bother with it.
We have one caller here and a number of other questions we can discuss. So I think rather than make this person wait, why don't we go ahead and talk with the caller, and then we'll certainly take other questions and continue to talk with our guest, Mary Agnes Carey. She's senior health reporter for Congressional Quarterly, and we're talking about some of the provisions of the new Medicare prescription drug legislation that went into effect. Well, the president signed it in December. It fully goes into effect in 2006. In the meantime, they are offering some assistance, a way for people to get some help with paying the cost of their medicines, although, as she has explained, it can be kind of complicated to figure out how to make it work for you. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Here's a caller in Indiana on our toll-free line. Hello.
Hello. I guess my observation is that not only the senior citizens, which I am one, are confused about this, is that I went to my pharmacy, which is a short distance away. I must have hit the pharmacist on a bad day, because he first thing asked me if you spend more than $880 a year on drugs, and I said, well, gosh, I don't think so at all. I only take two, and he said, forget it, and left me there, just standing there, and wouldn't help some other people, you know. Then I basically yelled at him again, and he said, look, it's too complicated. Don't even worry about it. And so I left the store, and the following day I called a doctor's office, and I talked to a nurse, and I must have got her on a bad day, too, because she said, sort of verbatim, the damn thing is a mess, and it'll probably never work. Wait till 2006. Hopefully you'll live that long. Then things may, you know, settle out. And I just wonder if you could speak to that. You know, I can understand people being confused about it, because it was confusing when they were arguing one way or the other, the Democrats and Republicans on it.
I think what happened. Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
And what I can see is it is, and since that time, you know, I've read articles in the paper and stuff. People from like you in Washington, you know, give short excerpts and things in the newspaper where I'm from, and I sort of get the drift is that unless you spend a lot of money on drugs and you have somebody who can help you through this, because the drug companies are not working with each other, they're working against each other, and that the time things roll around, the prices may be even higher, so, you know, do the best you can. It's sort of like the message I'm getting, and I just sort of wondered if this is a message everybody's getting.
I think what's happening is that because there's so much confusion, and if you're, for example, I'll go on the website, right, and I print out this guide to beneficiaries for choosing a Medicare prescription drug card. Well, I don't think it's part of my job to go read those things, but for example, a pharmacist who's already dealing with how many different private health insurance plans for all the under 65 population, dealing with all those requirements, dealing with those reimbursements, he or she's got a lot going on, and then here comes a brand new federal program, and if they haven't had time to think about it, or if they've gotten different answers when they've tried to inquire about it, I think there's just a level of frustration for physicians, for pharmacies. These people are at the ground level. They're the ones that deal every day with Medicare beneficiaries. And as confusing as Medicare has been at times for people when they just deal with a fee-for-service program, that's where about 90-95% of the beneficiaries are in that program. Here's a new layer of complexity. So I think that's where you're hearing the frustration about it. As far as whether or not to enroll, there's two schools of thought. Number one is if you don't use a lot of drugs a year, you don't have an expensive drug bill, why bother? It's just so complicated. But a contrarian point of view, which you might want to consider, is there is fairly little risk for you to do this other than the yearly fee for the card if the card you pick charges a yearly fee. And some people are saying this is a good way for seniors and disabled beneficiaries in Medicare to test the system, if you will, to get in there and you sign up for a drug card you think is going to be the best for you, and you sort of navigate the system because this is a test run to 2006. Now, the nurse who told you maybe everything will be settled out by then, I think a lot of things will be settled. But in the fall of 2005, looking forward to January 2006, you're going to be contemplating a far greater choice with more complexity and in some ways greater consequences because the drug card is not mandatory. You can enroll in it and try it, or you cannot enroll in it. If you do not enroll in the Medicare prescription drug program in 2006, January 2006, there'll be about a year, I think, of an enrollment period. If you choose not to do it, that's okay, but if you decide to get in later, there are going to be penalties placed on people who don't enroll during the enrollment period. And the reason they're going to do that is just like when you qualify for Medicare Part B, that's your supplemental, that's your Medicare that doesn't deal with the hospitals, that's the physicians and all the outpatient Medicare Part B. If you don't get in on that when you qualify for Medicare, you pay a penalty if you wait. So some people are looking at the drug card and saying, yes, it's complex, it might be difficult, but people should try it because they'll have more complex choices to make later on, and this might give them a comfort level with those choices to make. So I think you have to pick which way you want to go, but I could certainly understand a pharmacist or a nurse that are both very busy working saying in their minds maybe they haven't figured it out, or they've made a very quick assessment, it's only for people that have super high drug bills, and so they just tell people not to bother because it makes their life easier. I mean, I can understand that.
Okay, well, thanks a lot. I sure hope the hell it gets straightened out some way or another.
Well, I'll keep watching it for you.
All right, well, thanks for the call. Other questions are welcome. 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. Well, when January 2006 comes and the full program goes into effect, is it going to be structured like this? I mean, it sounds like it's not going to be any easier to figure out when the full thing goes into effect.
Well, I think that there's things we don't know about yet that could make it easier and harder. For example, what could make it easier is you may have a lot of private companies that are writing up literature and submitting it, sort of helping HHS and CMS, these are the government agencies overseeing Medicare, helping them explain the benefits to people. For the drug card, they are putting out their own promotional information, but I think the system of submitting it and evaluating it and trying to simplify it will start to smooth out a little bit. That could make it easier, but what's going to make it harder perhaps is that people will be deciding, for example, do I keep my Medicare benefits, the fee-for-service plan, and add on a prescription drug plan, or do I buy an entire plan from soup to nuts that gives me all my medical care and my Medicare prescription drugs, but it wouldn't be in fee-for-service. It would be a private health plan like you probably choose where you work or I choose where I work. Mm-hmm. And seniors will have to sit down and decide which option to go. And, for example, if they're in the fee-for-service program now, well, will their physician be in this private health plan that they might enroll in? They have to go and check all that out too. So it's I think it's going to be very complicated and difficult for the first few years that this thing is going on, and it might that complexity could sink it. People that dislike this bill, that didn't vote for it, a lot of them are Democrats. You have some Republicans that voted against it, often for other reasons, because they think it's just too expensive for the government to offer drug coverage, period. But a lot of Democrats who dislike this bill say that the strength of Medicare is that it's uniform coverage, and it's the same, and everybody gets the same thing, and everyone understands it. And to add all these layers of complication are unnecessary and will make it more difficult for seniors to understand and to get the coverage they need. And the bottom line is, we don't know. We just don't know what it's going to be like. But the people that like the program and the Bush administration is working very hard to try to make it work for folks. And I think you could see in 2006 that this, if people, it's not working the way envisioned, it's envisioned, you could see more of a push on the Hill to change it, but we don't know the answer to that yet.
One of the stories that I read, again, ongoing, staying on the prescription drug discount card, said that the government was expected something like close to 8 million people would sign up, and
right.
It's been about 3.5 million. And
right.
Some of those people, apparently, they didn't actually sign up themselves. The health plan that they were in signed them up.
Right.
And I guess I wonder at this point now, is the thinking that the reason more people haven't signed up, does it go back to some of the things we've already talked about, is that either people aren't really quite sure the program exists or aren't quite sure how to navigate it or are still thinking about it, and that in 6 months to 6 to 10 months from now, a year from now, we're going to actually see more people have signed up?
Well, that's all those things are right. I mean, they the people that have been signed up, they're already in private health insurance plans, health maintenance organizations mostly, and they have been enrolled, automatically enrolled by their health plan to get this card. And when you've got people at the the federal level, the top level, saying to beneficiaries, it's okay, take your time, look at the prices, look at the website. As you mentioned before, the prices can change, the drugs offered can change.
Mm-hmm.
Proponents of the program say that the plans are competing against one another, and that competition will give you, the beneficiary, better choices at a better price. But they also didn't want to lock, proponents of the program didn't want to lock the companies into saying you have to offer this drug and you have to, you can't change the price of it or you can't change what you're offered. They wanted to give the flexibility to the companies with the thought that the competition means the companies do the most to give you the best price and the best option. But you could see more folks taking this program over the next 4 to 5 months, or as your previous caller indicated, if they're getting a negative message from their doctors or their pharmacists about it, then they might not roll. They might not enroll, and they might not try it. And then when it comes to these choices in the fall of 2005, 2006, you might have a lot of folks who didn't try the drug card or kind of uncomfortable with the whole idea of it, having to make an even bigger choice at that point.
Well, let me, again, wait, I've got a caller here. I want to get right to them. But let me just ask one question real quick. If I pick a certain card, and because I'm taking medications A, B, and C, and it will pay for them, or maybe it will pay for, give me something on A and B.
Right.
So I say, okay, I'm going to sign up for this card. In 6 months or 8 months, could that issuer of the card decide they're not going to cover those medicines anymore, and then am I stuck until the next time I can choose another card?
Yep. You're stuck until November this year when you can choose for 2006. So if you're in that predicament, but once, yeah, they can change their mind, they're not offering the drug, and then that's it.
Okay. We have a caller here in nearby community of Belgium. That's our line four. Hello.
Hello. This might be slightly off the topic in a small sort of way, but why do we have to make it so difficult? I mean, you go to other countries like New Zealand and Canada and European countries, they've got a medical system that handles all this with a whole lot less hassle. Why do we have to always make it so difficult for ourselves?
Because we, as a nation, through our elected representatives and the votes they take, have not decided that we want universal health care. They dislike, people dislike universal health care, argue about the expense of it, that it stymies innovation, that the American health system is the most innovative and comes up with the best cures and the best treatments because we foster the entrepreneurial spirit within healthcare, and that we we give financial incentives for people to make the better drug, the better treatment, and that a lot of these treatments are not found in other countries, and that people from those countries, of course, they're the richest people, come here to get their medical treatment. But until we decide, yes, we want universal health care, and yes, we're willing to pay for it, it takes, you know, our income tax rates are far lower than a lot of these countries. Doesn't mean we can't change it. I'm not saying one's better than the other. It's just a decision as a nation we haven't made.
I might also point out, ma'am, that we are also the most expensive place to get medical care, too. So we're paying for it one way or the other.
Right. That's right. And there are people on the Hill that argue that, on the Hill being Capitol Hill.
Yeah.
There's people that argue that we, for example, all the people that don't have, there's 40 million people that don't have health care insurance.
I know all about that.
You know what I mean? Where you go, if you're really in trouble, you're going to go to the emergency room. Well, there's a federal law that says they have to treat you, they have to stabilize you. But once they stabilize you, they can get you out of the hospital. As that program, as that problem accelerates in this country, that's where a lot of people have felt, a lot of medical hospitals have felt that pressure financially because they've got all this uncompensated care. And so it's, you're right, you pay for it one way or the other. How do we pay for it? How do we decide as a nation we're going to pay for it? And that is, you know, our debates on the Capitol Hill have been patients' Bill of Rights. Well, that one has kind of faded. And then you've had Medicare prescription drugs. Well, you're going to have drug reimportation. That's another topic about why is it illegal for people to import drugs from other countries where they cost less than they do in the United States.
And what's really interesting, ma'am, is they came from here in the first place. They go there.
Right.
And they come back cheaper.
Right. That
doesn't
happens
make
a lot.
Sense.
Exactly. And a lot of drug companies in America are manufacturing at off-site plants. And they'll sell them for one price in one country and a different price. It's often higher in the United States. That's a big debate on Capitol Hill. This thing of the uninsured, it never goes away. It's always around. And until we as a country decide we want to spend a certain amount of money on that and we want to do it in a certain way, it's not going to change. So that's where, if you look to the private market and you feel the private market incentives are the way to go, which is where health care is in many ways in this country, and now that's been brought to the Medicare program, then the proponents of that, you know, live or die by the sword. It either works the way they envision or it doesn't, and then we as a nation have to respond.
And clean up the mess when it gets taken care of in the long run.
Okay, that's certainly one viewpoint.
Thank you very much.
Well, thanks for the call. Other questions are welcome. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Our guest is Mary Agnes Carey. She's a senior health reporter for Congressional Quarterly. It's a publication that has been around for, I think, about 50 years now, covering Washington politics. It's available as a print thing, as a magazine. It's also online, congressionalquarterly.com. If you're interested in following politics in Washington, that's one place to go to find out what's going on. Questions here are also welcome. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. One of the stories that I came across, and this was back in April, even before the drug prescription drug cards, discount cards became available on June 1st, was there already were some fraud problems going on, either that we had people apparently who were trying to sell fake discount cards or other people who were cold calling seniors,
right,
trying to get information from them or somehow trying to bilk people and make money off this. Has to date, has there been a serious problem with fraud, people who are what they're trying to do is actually cheat people?
Yeah, I don't think there's been a widespread serious problem, in part because the powers that be kind of got on it early, and a lot of people understand if someone calls you for personal information, you don't give that information over the phone. And I think once the word was put out, there are certainly isolated cases. I can't say that it's been non-existent, as you mentioned. You've got some of it, but the majority of the providers that are out there, the vast majority, are the legitimate ones. And I think more people, even if they're calling 1-800-MEDICARE and they're waiting too long, or if they're going to a website and they have to have some back and forth to get what they want, they know that that's where you get your information. And these people that are calling them, I hope people have gotten the word, you know, you don't give out any personal information, don't give out your Social Security number, don't give out your income, don't give out anything to these people, because the providers of the drug cards are not allowed to do that kind of thing. I mean, they can send you something in the mail, but it's my understanding they're not going to be doing telemarketing to get to people. So I think they've got a good hold on that.
We have someone else to talk with here. Champagne's the caller, line number one.
Yes,
hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
You talk about fraud. Weren't we given fraudulent numbers for the Medicare prescription drug benefit in the first place.
You mean the cost of it?
Yes. I mean, there were people who knew that the numbers were going to be a whole lot higher, and then it was pushed through Congress, and then several weeks later they found out that these people had been muzzled and stifled, and they came out and said that they had been muzzled and stifled, and that the numbers were actually like, I don't remember now after reading it in the newspaper several months ago, that the numbers are actually like a half again higher than what the Bush administration had presented to Congress to get this bill pushed through.
Here's the deal on that, and it's going to get into some Washington speak, but I'll try to make it as mainstream as possible. There's an organization in Washington called the Congressional Budget Office, shorthand is CBO.
Right.
And everybody looks to CBO and Congress. They are the arbiter of scoring. They tell Congress a bill is worth X when they vote on it. And they have their own methods to determine how much that bill is. So that's what was happening. It's not uncommon for proponents of a bill to say, we're trying to hit a figure, and in this case it was $400 billion over 10 years. If we do X, Y, and Z, does it hit $400 billion? And so that's where CBO came in. And CBO, when it got to the final voting, said the bill was going to be the net expense to the country, to the Treasury, would be $395 billion. So that's what people voted on.
Right.
Independently, and this also happens, administration estimates were putting the bill at about $138 billion higher. And there were differing estimates within, for example, the administration had thought there would be a higher enrollment than the Congressional Budget Office. The administration had a different number of what seniors would spend than the Congressional Budget Office. The government believes you'll have a higher enrollment rate in the Medicare Advantage plans than the Congressional Budget Office. These numbers go back and forth. So the internal Bush administration estimates were higher. But since Congress has set by its own law, has said the cost of a bill that we vote on is determined by the CBO, that's why the CBO number was there. Now the question is, who knew what and when did they know it? The conferees, those are the folks who basically cut the deal on the Medicare bill, the members of the House and the Senate. And for the Medicare bill, they were almost all Republican, with the exception of two Senate Democrats who were viewed by the Republican leadership as moderates, Democrats they could deal with. The rest of the Democrats who were appointed to the conference weren't allowed in the room. The conferees had said, we had access to these numbers and we knew about them, but the CBO numbers dominate. And then you had one conferee Max Baucus from Montana, who was saying that he wasn't made aware of the numbers and he didn't know about them, and any time he wanted to get scoring information from the administration or talk to people from the Office of Management and Budget, that's the Bush administration's scorekeeping office, if you will, on a bill, that he had to have somebody from on the administration on the phone with him. So there's great speculation that people were muzzled. There's an actuary for the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. Their chief actuary, Richard Foster, has said that his former boss, Tom Scully, who ran CMS, was silencing him from talking to members of Congress about the cost of the bill, because the folks at CMS, some of them knew the bill would cost more and predicted it would cost more. So you've got this tension going on, and that then there was a legal ruling within the government that the head of CMS could stop this actuary from talking to Congress. So they say, look, CBO is the bottom line. That's all we have to worry about. It doesn't matter that we had internal estimates that the bill was going to be higher. So when this story broke, I and other reporters, I'm sure, went to people who voted for the bill and said, would this have changed your mind? And some said it would, and some said it wouldn't. Conservatives, for example, that never liked this bill to begin with, said they didn't believe the $400 billion number. They knew it would always be more. And the bottom line here is they really don't even know how much it's going to cost, because you can't predict how many seniors will use the benefit, how many seniors will use a brand-name drug versus a generic drug, and how much they'll spend on how much they'll use in drugs themselves, because these numbers are going to be widely variant, and the government has had a real hard time predicting this kind of thing before. And we've got all these baby boomers coming in the program starting 2010. So as this has been a very interesting story, as you know, because you talk about differences in numbers. Yeah. Was a government employee silenced? Was that legal? What did Congress know when they voted on the bill? But the bottom line, really, is they have no idea how much this thing's going to cost.
Right.
So I hope that sounds like a spy novel or something. I hope that you could follow that, but I was just trying to give you the shorthand on it.
Well, I'm almost 60, and I don't right now take any prescription drugs.
Right.
And it's almost as if I don't want to know I've got anything because I don't want to take any prescription drugs. It sounds almost like I'm more and more frustrated that the people who are supposedly looking after our economic health as well as our physical health, mm-hmm. are playing two different things off against each other, and the people are caught in the middle.
Well, let me ask you something. Are you still employed?
Yes.
And do you have insurance through your employer?
No, I do not.
You don't? Okay. Because one thought here that is, in many ways, I mean, obviously current beneficiaries have to deal with the drug bill and how it affects their lives, but the thought is, especially as baby boomers begin to retire, that all of us that get insurance in the workplace will want to keep that kind of a model of insurance being one plan that gives you drugs and all your coverage, that you'll be comfortable with that when you go into Medicare, because as it stands now, you go on to Medicare and you can't keep your employer's privately offered
right.
insurance.
Right.
And so that's something that, now whether that will go or not, I don't know. But the thought is that they know that current beneficiaries will struggle with understanding this, but as Medicare goes on and more workers retire who've already had private health insurance, they'll want to keep it. And so it won't be as difficult for those folks, and they're the ones that are going to bust the budget anyway because, you know, in the baby boomers start retiring in 2010, and that's when Medicare is really going to start soaring in costs. Same thing for Social Security.
Well, so. It just seems as if instead of making it as streamlined and as cooperative and as working as smoothly as it possibly could, and for the most vulnerable citizens who are going to be, you know, people in their 70s and 80s and above, who sometimes find things confusing anyway, it's going to discourage people from getting the prescription drugs that would keep them healthy.
Yeah, they don't want that to happen. And I
are
really,
you sure?
You know, they don't. But I don't know. But this is in some ways, and I don't, you know, this is a social experiment. It's the biggest change made to Medicare since it was created in 1965, and we're all living through it.
Right, but it seems like it was done to say we fixed Medicare.
Right.
We gave you a drug benefit, and yet many, many people are not going to be able to access it and take advantage of it because it is the gentleman earlier talked about, even, you know, when he talked to the nurse or when he talked mm-hmm. to the pharmacist,
right.
there is a level of frustration that people will throw up their hands and say, I'm not going to get involved, and therefore, is it a benefit if you're not involved? I don't think so.
Right. No, I mean, that could very well happen. Someone could be very comfortable with their physicians, and they want to go on a private health plan because it's maybe less expensive than paying for your than a standalone drug plan and your Medigap, your supplemental insurance, and then your physician could say, well, I'm not going to take that health plan.
Right.
I mean, we face that every year in my family. I'm on my husband's insurance, and every year I have to get the book out and look, is Dr. X still on? Is my pediatrician still on there? Is this doctor still on there? And it's nerve-wracking.
Well, it seems to me that this is being run in a very in the most unfriendly way for the possible consumers, and maybe I'm just getting a little leery of what's the motive of all of the people who wrote the bill, and you know it was written not by consumers, it was written by dispensers or the people who will be benefiting, the big drug companies, so that... I'm more and more frustrated the more I hear about people patting themselves on the back that they voted in this wonderful Medicare bill and this wonderful card that people can get to reduce their drug costs. And at the same time, you say, but if it doesn't work for most people, or if it's so frustrating for most people that they can't get into it, you know, it's very suspect to me. Hmm. But I thank you for your comment.
Well, thank you for the call.
The
very question that the caller posed about the difference between the actual cost, the stated cost, that was one of the things that I wanted to make sure I asked you about. And I was just curious because I did read these stories back in March about when the chief Medicare actuary, Richard Foster, was in front of Congress when he said that in June of 2003, he provided the White House with data indicating that the cost of the prescription drug legislation would be between 25% and 50% more than the administration was saying, and that he says, that as Richard Foster says, he was told by his boss not to tell Congress.
Right.
And I guess what I was wondering, you know, maybe stuff like this happens in Washington all the time, but I guess I was wondering whether having passed and members of Congress having voted for it, they'd felt it all snookered afterwards because it turned out that it cost more and that the White House knew it was going to cost more and they didn't say this is how much it's actually going to cost.
Right. I mean, Ken Conrad is a Democrat from North Dakota. He voted for the bill and he said to me, he wouldn't have voted for the bill had he known it was that price, and he thinks a lot of other members of Congress wouldn't have voted for the bill. But what I can't answer is there are other times, I'm sure, that internal government estimates show a bill at a higher cost and even probably a lower cost than the Congressional Budget Office shows, but the CBO is the arbiter for Congress on a bill, and Congress has set it up that way. Now, whether or not you should be able to have an agency head say to an employee, if a member of Congress asks you a question, you cannot talk to that member of Congress. Is that right? Is that wrong? Tom Scully got a legal opinion inside CMS that said he could do that, but there is still an investigation going on from the Inspector General at the Department of Health and Human Services into this matter. That investigation hasn't concluded, but when that comes out, that may say, it could say it was a legal thing for Richard Foster not to be able to speak. It's not legal. You know, it's legal or illegal, but it's appropriate or inappropriate. And I hope your caller can take some comfort from the fact that if this plan doesn't work, it doesn't work for seniors and people complain about it, Congress can change it. There was a catastrophic health care plan. It was 1988. There was a drug plan that Congress passed. I believe that's what it was called. But they repealed it. It was a prescription drug plan, and the ultimate flaw was that people were paying for things they weren't necessarily getting. I think it was catastrophic health care. I think they called it that. But
yeah.
That's the one where the seniors jumped all over Dan Roskin-Kelsey's car. You might remember that.
Oh, yes.
Yeah,
yes,
they rolled all
well.
Over
yes.
it. They went. People had to pay money, and the plan. The thing was, look, if you have a catastrophic health care cost as a Medicare beneficiary, this is going to help you. But people were saying, I'm paying for something I'm not getting. And it backfired, and it blew up in Congress's face, and they repealed it. Some people, that even though they dislike this program and didn't vote for it in Congress, know you've approved a Medicare drug program as Congress, right, and the Bush administration's done it. So there's an expectation now from seniors that the government will deliver prescription drug coverage. If it's not working the way they set it up, there's nothing to stop them from changing it. And it could mean they end up spending more money, or they expand it, or they could drop it. This is just, it's something that's been very popular on Capitol Hill now for 5 or 6 years, and a lot of folks felt like, you know what, we just got to get started. Members of Congress said, let's just vote for it and get it going. May not be what I want, may not be done, it may not be as expensive as I would like or as generous as I would like, but we've got to get going on this thing because we need it for all the reasons everybody knows, that you've got people choosing between food and drugs and rent and drugs, and people are cutting their pills in half or they're not filling their prescriptions because they can't afford it. So it really is an experiment for Capitol Hill. It's an experiment for the public, and we have to see where it takes us.
We have about 10 minutes left, maybe a little bit less. We have some other callers. Our guest is Mary Agnes Carey. She's a senior health reporter for Congressional Quarterly, and we're talking about the new Medicare prescription drug legislation that the president signed in December and what it is and where it stands now. Questions welcome 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Champagne callers next, line number 2. Hello.
You may have answered this question already, but I guess I didn't find the answer satisfying. If a person were to choose a card based on a medication that they're taking, and then the doctor changes it, for example, my mother has been on 3 different heart medications since January, but the doctor doesn't know when he gives her that, whether that's how that's all going to work out over time, and may make a change depending on blood pressure and all kinds of things, heart rhythm. Does that mean then the person is stuck with that card for a long time and wouldn't be able to apply it to a new medication?
Here's what I would do if that happened to me. That is technically the answer. If the card doesn't cover the drug, then you're on your own. And they could have said, we cover it when you come in. Let's say you enroll in it now, right? Two mm-hmm. months from now, they drop the drug.
Mm-hmm.
Or your mother's doctor says, look, you got to have a different drug and the drug's not covered. The thought is, and again, this is for people who are endorsing this program, their argument is they think those instances will be few and far between because it would build bad will. But it does make sense on some level. They're not going to, that if a drug company brings you in and then drops a drug, or if there's an obvious bait and switch and it's widespread, you would have the government investigate it. But they don't think people are going to drop the drugs that they're covering, right? But it can legally it can happen.
But
here's what I would, if it happened to me, here's what I would do, right? If it was my mom, I would find out everything. Before I enrolled in that card, I would ask the question, I understand that you have the legal right to change the drugs you cover. Do you have an appeals process if you change a drug? What if a doctor rules a drug is medically necessary? And what happens if you cover it now and you don't cover it 2 months from now? What are my rights? What are my mother's rights to appeal this? That would be the question I would ask going in. Because they can drop a drug coverage. That is true. They can drop it once they decide to cover it. But the argument from people who voted for the bill and like the card, they're saying, look, you're setting up a scenario that probably isn't going to happen because they're not going to want to get the ill will of beneficiaries by doing that. But legally they can. You're right. And then let's say you were in a drug card now and you were dissatisfied. Your mother's dissatisfied with that drug card. You could pick a different card in November for 2005, but you can only have one Medicare-approved drug card at a time. But before I enrolled, I would ask those questions because they have the legal right to do it. I would ask about that.
Okay, I'm not sure if you understood that the doctors change drugs on people.
Right.
Yeah, okay.
Right, yeah, no, I do. And so if the doctor changes, let me rephrase that. I'm sorry, I misspoke on that one. Let's say the doctor's thinking of 3 different drugs that might work. Then I would say, I would try to find out which cards cover all 3 of those before I enrolled my card. You could do that.
Right.
You know, and then if option A doesn't work, then you go to drug A doesn't work, then you go to drug B and you go to drug C.
Right, and then you change doctors as well. Another question I have is, you're saying that people have to have, you know, $1,200 or less income in order to be eligible for this.
No, it's $12,000 a year.
$12,000 a year, okay.
Yeah. About 12,569, I think, is the number.
Right, so that's less than $1,200 a month. But if they have no other insurance, they're in a lot different economic situation vis-a-vis medical care than if they do have an insurance from, you know, their previous employer. So I guess whether you have other insurance is not going to be considered.
You mean for the $600 of assistance?
Right.
I don't think so. I think that's all based on income.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have other insurance, make sure for everybody, no matter what your income, they should look at what their current plan covers versus what the drug card would cover.
Mm-hmm.
For some people, your current health insurance is probably better than the drug card, but for some it's not.
Yeah, and going back to the question about how much the society pays, given, you know, poor public health systems that people have been complaining about, for example, since 9/11, or poor preventive health mm-hmm. as opposed to emergency trauma health care, or the 40 million people that are uninsured, how does the society pay, not just in terms of, like, direct money, but perhaps in terms of social problems?
How does society bear the brunt of not having people insured?
Right.
Is that what you mean?
Mm-hmm.
I think we do it at the emergency rooms because when hospital has a lot of uncompensated care, to the extent that they can, they hike the rates up for their private payers. And I think you have people that make choices they might not make otherwise about jobs and where they live. and so on if they don't have health insurance. I think it presents a barrier to people and a barrier to society and how people live their lives if they can't get health coverage. They may stay in a job they don't like. They may skip preventative care that could put them and their families and possibly people around them at risk for some sort of thing at some point if they're not out there getting the preventative care they need. And if you don't get your preventative care, it could set you up for a situation that costs society more later if you you've never had your blood pressure screened, you've never had your cholesterol checked because you don't have insurance, you have a massive heart attack, you go to the hospital, it's a $50,000-$60,000 expenditure that now the hospital has to take care of because you haven't had insurance. But I think those are the major ways we all pay for that.
I'm going to jump in here. My apologies to the caller, and we have one other we simply can't take because we've used our time. And we want to thank you, Mary Agnes, very much for, again, giving us some of your time. We really appreciate it.
Sure. It was great. Thanks.
Our guest, Mary Agnes Carey. She is senior health reporter for Congressional Quarterly. It's available in print and also online, congressionalquarterly.com. And it's a publication that for a long time now has been reporting on Washington politics. And if you're interested in keeping up on this and other issues, you just might want to take a look at it. Programs here on WILL are made possible by a grant from Christopher's Fine Jewelry Design, a gallery of imaginative jewelry and gifts in downtown Champaign, offering one-of-a-kind custom design, gemstone round tables, and conflict-free diamonds direct from Canada. The end of our fiscal year is now just 3 days away, and we are still a little bit more than $80,000 short of our goal for listener support. Federal, state, and University of Illinois funding for next fiscal year continues to be very uncertain, and the only way that we'll be able to provide the program service that you expect is with your help. You can call us right now and make a contribution. Maybe it would be your first time, or maybe you can increase your current level of support. You can do that by calling 217-244-9455 and making a pledge. Also, if you would like to do it online, and you could do it that way, you just go to our website. It's WILL.UIUC.edu. And again, make a contribution with your credit card. You can also put it in the mail if you do it right away and get it postmarked today. Send it to UIF, WILL Radio, 300 North Goodwin in Urbana, 61801. Of course, the easiest thing to do is just give us a call, 244-9455. It means a lot to us and to the future of programming here on WILL. Well, that's where we will leave it, because up next we have the Afternoon Magazine. The host for the show is Celeste Quinn.
Thank you, David. Coming up today in the 1 o'clock hour of the Afternoon Magazine, we'll talk with an award-winning architect and certified interior designer. Her name is Sarah Susanka, and her latest book is Home by Design, Transforming Your House into Home. She'll be our guest today following the 1 o'clock news. Prices are lower at this moment on the Chicago Board of Trade and the Mercantile Exchange. Beans down significantly. July wheat, 338.5, down 2.75. September, 347.25, down 2.75. July corn, 271.25, down 5. September, 274.75, down 5.75. December corn, 278.5, down 7. March, 285.25, down 5.75. July beans, 878.